Okay, so we spoke about a few different things over here. I just want to give some practical suggestions, or semi-practical suggestions.
Could you be practical?
Because when you challenge with something, you find something challenging. And some of them will work, some of them won't work, some of them will work sometimes. When it doesn't work, you try something else, etc. Okay, first step is, and this is going to sound a little bit intense over here, that I had a guy comes to me, he's married, I don't know, less than a year. He told me he's thinking about getting divorced. So I said to him, I don't understand what you're saying. So he said, I want to get divorced. I said, I don't know what the word means. What word? I don't know that word. I'm not familiar with it. So he says, like, a garrison. I said, not familiar. He says, get. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. So, okay, what are you trying to say? I says, I'm trying to say there's no such word in your vocabulary. That's what I'm trying to say. There's no such word in your vocabulary. That's what I'm trying to say. You made a commitment. You made a commitment. You deal with it. Now, I'm not saying there aren't scenarios in loyal and other marriages which are supposed to end. The Bershom did create such a concept. We don't have to go to the Pope, right, to get it annulled. But they add some concept that this is a real commitment, and you have responsibility to make this work. That is, it has to be the foundation. There's no back door. Once you're in the situation, you'll deal with it. As long as you think there's a back door, so we'll have to deal with it. So, you know. So that's what I told him. And he came back to me a while later, and he says, you know, he has such a wonderful wife. And I said, oh, Baruch Hashem. She has a wonderful husband. you know, he made it a real commitment to make this thing, really put himself into this. You know, this is commitment. This is loyalty. Was talking about one of his tapes about the Ten Commandments of marriage. It's an interesting tape. You can get your hands on it, you know, or the CD or recording or whatever they call it nowadays, podcast, you know, all the above, you know, the iPod. They have the iPod, the regular iPod, you know,
right?
So so over there he says that. If you've ever been in New York, you'll really appreciate this. He says, you know, he has this old Italian couple walking down Ocean Parkway. He weighs 300 pounds. She weighs 300 pounds. Is there romance? There's no romance, but there's loyalty. Okay. Can you picture him saying that? Yes. It's straight on another, right? Is there romance? There's no romance, but there's loyalty. Okay. The first step is before I say this is it. Okay. Loyalty. Second piece of advice, which is going to, is go to sleep. You know, why am I saying this? Because there's this piece of wisdom out there about marriage. Never go to sleep angry. Right, just work it out. Right. So, at least one place where I saw it, you know, Mrs. Shane, Rebison Shane, in one of her books, I forget which one is All for the Boss, one of the other books, she writes that she made a commitment with her husband, Ramesha Zichron Livracha, that they never go to bed angry with each other. So one time they had a fight, and she said, you know, Moshe, I'm going to sleep. Can we make up? He said, yeah, I agree with you. They made up and they went to bed. So for people like that, it's a great idea. Like, you know, the making up just says, yeah, make up, and they made up. You know, like, you know, so then fine. You know, but these people who, like, weren't making up, take, like, 3 hours, you know, I can guarantee you in the morning, when you have some rest under your belt, and life is, you know, you'll see the whole thing from a different picture. And it won't be such an issue anymore. Like, really? We were upset about that last night? Oh, that's ridiculous. Okay, let's make up. Let's make up. But meanwhile, they spent 3 hours at night time trying to think, talk it through, and they can't get anywhere because they're getting more and more frustrated and exhausted and tired. And they can't think it intelligently. So this colloquial wisdom that you can't go to bed angry, as I understand it, like it's horrible feeling to go to bed angry at somebody, but you'll do much better for yourself to go to sleep and wake up in the morning and take care of it.
Okay. So in most cases, you should go to sleep.
You have to work it out with your wife, you know, but the arrangements. But
I'm saying that what does this mean?
I'm just saying, you know, the this colloquial wisdom that you can't go to bed angry. I haven't found the Chazal anywhere yet. It's, you know, if you feel that, you know, it'll be much more sense. You say, you know, listen, we are not working this out. Neither of us are we're both exhausted. Why don't we step away for a minute and we'll you know, go to bed and we'll feel better in the morning. We'll talk about that and it'll probably work out. It doesn't have to be, now, again, emotionally it's not easy. So you have to sort of like work out that that's going to be an approach you're going to have in your life beforehand. Now, taking that a step weiter, from that thought process. So here you have something which you realize that that's very possible in 12 hours from now won't bother you anymore. And I guarantee you probably in a week from now for sure won't bother you. So why is it bothering you now? Right. So the next point is, if you can give yourself a little bit of distance and time perspective, there's something which it doesn't really bother me. I know very well in a short period of time it's not going to bother me anymore. So then why don't I just transport that thought process from the future back to now, and it shouldn't bother me.
Okay. Does that work though?
It's up to you. Okay. Now let's take it a little more intensely. Okay. By the way, Franz has over a story with one of his. Troubadours, and he also gave it one of his classes. He gave a speech about Shalom Bais. He said over this story, I think quoting Rabbi Krohn, if I call correctly. Rabbi Krohn's quoting Rabbi Freyand. I don't remember which one, but that's, I think. Okay, Omer Rabbi Freyand, Omer Rabbi Krohn, right? Okay, so there's a couple, woman's an Israeli woman. The husband's a type A personality. Type A personality, just like, gotta get things done, move on, go, build, do. His wife is this real type Z personality. Like, you know, lay back, you know, no rush, take care of it tomorrow, next week, you know, type of thing. And I can imagine that in their marriage there were things which would, you know, get on his nerves, you know, with that type of attitude. And her response always was like, you know, get upset with me, it's not so important, like, don't get so upset. Right? And of course that didn't do anything to placate him. Okay. But here you are, so they lived in New York, so part of the New York reality of many people is that the family goes up to the mountains for the summer and the husband stays in the city and comes up for the weekends. So that's what they were doing. He comes there on Shabbos, and so he gets in, you know, he leaves whatever time, and the drive is horrible, the traffic is horrendous. He gets there a few hours before Shabbos, whatever it is, an hour before Shabbos, and he walks in, he realizes on Shabbos, that he noticed his wife's purse was hanging on the baby's crib. And he didn't want the purse, which is Shabbos Muxas, we hang on the crib, etc. So he got upset about it, you know, already on Shabbos, because anything about it, he noticed it. She said, you know, okay, you know, you're right, but like, why are you so upset? I said, look, it's not so important. Said, don't get so upset about it. Good. So Sunday he leaves, goes back into the city. He's during the week he gets a phone call that he has to come immediately back to the mountains. His wife, who was expecting, there was complications. She was taken to the hospital, and he should come immediately. So comes back to the mountains, and by the time he drives up, you know, takes 2 or 3 hours. He gets to the hospital. His wife had passed away. It's a true story. Wife had passed away. So he was broken, it was terrible. Goes back to the bungalow to make takes care of the arrangements. Goes back to the bungalow, and he needs to get the checkbook to write a check to cover the cost for the funeral. And he finds her checkbook and it's sitting in the purse, hanging in the baby's crib. He says, "You know what? She was right. It's not important." That's the story. So perspective.
Was there like a happy ending there, or that's like
that's the ending.
That's the ending.
It's not too happy, but it's an ending.
So the point over here is that perspective is a wonderful thing. does it really bother you? Like, if this would make or break your marriage, would it bother you? No. So then, you know what? Try not to make such an issue out of it. Now, I want to go back again. I want to point out, the Rav Volba has a fascinating, in Ali Shurik El Beis, he has a parak called, I think it's called Kapdanus. Being Machman and things. Okay? And he quotes it at the beginning of the parak. He quotes the Rambam, and the Rambam says, you know, that the halacha is Rambam, it's Ramban and Parsha. Hechech techech hazam yisecho. What's Pshat the positive mitzvah? Hechech techech hazam yisecho. Chazal darshan means in mitzvah giving techech, giving people musr. But that's not how the Pshat and the Pasuk is. The Ramban on in Pirush HaChumash and the Rambam in Sefer Hilchos Deos understands that it means to discuss it. If you're upset at somebody, discuss it with them. Bring your proofs. Let him bring his proofs. You bring your argument why you think you're right. Let him bring your argument why he's right. Then you'll get it off. Well, see, okay, don't hold an anger on the person. Don't hold an owl on the person. So discuss it with him. Let's see. He might be able to correct it. You know, transfer it himself. He says, if you're not, you have another option. If he really, really doesn't bother you, that's fine. You don't have to discuss it with him. But if it bothers you, it's not right to keep it inside of you because it's just gonna color your relationship. And he says also, "Oy pirshim chazal." Chazal also said the pshat of mitzvah given to chacham. So the pshat is referring to this issue of discussing things. If something bothers you, it's a mitzvah to discuss it. It's a law in the Torah. It's a mitzvah say to discuss it. You have to know when and you have to know how, but it's a mitzvah to discuss it. Brother Rambam points out, but the Torah is holy about is if you have a companion on the person, if you're able to remove the companion, it's okay, no problem. Ad kan divrei Rambam. So Rambam says,
what? Where the Rambam is?
Hilchos Deos. I'm going to say Perek Dalet. Not Perek Zion. I'm trying to figure. Perek Zion, actually. Perek Zion, I think it is. Right. So now, the point I'm not saying is every time you have an issue, people are like, listen, let's read the Rambam together. I have to tell you, you know, I have to say, it's the Rambam. It's the Shemana Taina. That's not why I told you this. Okay. So Volvo says, here's the problem. The problem is we all have capatas. We have a multitude of capatas of people. Things that bother us. Okay? But we don't talk about it because they're beneath our dignity to talk about, because a person of my stature really shouldn't be bothered by the fact that, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So we don't talk about it. And they build up. And that's not a good thing. Okay, so there is a and let's bring the challenge into focus. You know, it's a little thing. It's not the end of the world. So, you know, there's a rabbi joke. I tell you the rabbi joke about the toothpaste, right? Okay, fine. Rabbis have horrible jokes. Anyway, so this couple comes to the rabbi. That they said, you know, that they're thinking about getting divorced. The rabbi says, you know, my responsibility is the rabbi. We can see if we can reconcile. Says, rabbi, it's not relevant to reconcile. You just have to get divorced. I just can't deal with it anymore. The woman says, you know, I'm ready to leave. I'm just done with this. I said, but like, you know, talk about the issues. Maybe we can, says, rabbi, you won't understand. Just tell with me and we'll see. Okay, rabbi. He says, there are people in the world which are squeezers. There are people in the world which are rollers. He says, huh? What's squeezers and rollers? Says, rabbi, there's two ways to use a toothpaste. There's people who roll it up very nicely, and it's nice and clean. And there's people who squeeze it, and it makes a mess, and I can't take it anymore, and I want to get divorced. That's a joke.
Joke.
Okay? Why is it a joke? Because it's a caricature of some of the things which I get to discuss and show the bias with people. Like, you know, that people come to discuss me, like, you know, I think, like, it's about the same level of problems as squeezing. But why does it bother people so much? So she makes a mess with the toothpaste. Like, you know, at the end of the world, like, you know, like to the point that, you know. So it's very simple. If you take a extremely superficial scratch on your hand, and you put a little scratch there, you rub it again, and 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 again. What happens? It's a festering wound. It's just a little scratch. Yeah, but it's a wound. It's with pus coming out of it after a while. So Dale Carnegie has a great story about this expedition of scientists who go down to Antarctica. So they go to Antarctica. It's a true story. It's a documented story. So they go down to Antarctica. So how do you get to Antarctica? There's no airstrip to land on. It's a long walk to get there by foot, you know. Under the water, right? So you take a boat, right? The problem is that the boat has to land, has to come into a port. The port is only ice free 2 to 3 months a year, and the rest of the year it's frozen over. You can't bring a boat in. So they can take a boat off a distance and bring a helicopter in. But okay, so basically what they do is they send the expeditions come there, and they stay there for 9-10 months till the next summer. Of course, everything is underground because they can't live in the above ground temperatures. And on the ground, they can control the temperatures better, etc. So they have these caverns underground where they have sleeping quarters and eating quarters and all the different things that they have, the instruments, etc. They go for expeditions up above once in a while, etc. So you have this group of scientists, like 60, 70 scientists come, and they're going to be spending 10 months together in this very limited area of space. They sit down to the first meal, and of course they're scientists, so they come with idiosyncrasies, right? Right? And so scientist number one, he's very into healthy digestion, and he made done research that chewing your food beforehand is very important, and the optimal amount of chews to chew your food before you swallow it is 42 chews. If you chew each bite that you eat 42 times, the body digests it much better. Well, so he sits down by breakfast, he starts eating, right? Every bite, 42 times. And the guy across from him like finds it a little bit like, you know, bothersome, a little bit uncomfortable, whatever, a little bit like, you know, okay, you know. They sit down at lunchtime. Same thing happens again because they have the same seats. They're there for 9 months. Breakfast, lunch, and supper across from each other. And by the time that the 9 months are up, the scientist B, who's recording the story, tells the story afterwards. He says, it took every single ounce of my self-control not to commit murder. I want to kill him. This is the story. Right? If you get my drift, like, what do you care if the person chews food? Just because we're makpidim, but things bother us. Like, you know, we don't like things to be different than the way we think they should be. And it's going to get on our nerves. Right? So she always sets the table with the cup here instead of here. There are people who will be bothered by that. And it happens one time. I'm going to tell her I care about how she picked the cups. I told her 3 times. She, you know, I'm going to sound weird if I tell her. But it bothers me. That's not an option. Your options are either to put it into perspective and say, this is ridiculous, and truly mean it, not say, you know, I really bothers me, but I'm not going to say anything out because I'm going to control myself, but I have you know, I'm working my meatus. I'm not asking you to work on your meatus. Don't work on your meatus. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to get rid of it. That shouldn't exist. Like, we think work on meatus means, listen, it really bothers me, but I'm going to control myself and I'm working on, you know, that's horrible, because it's not going to work. It's going to come out at some point in time, somewhere else, you're going to get frustrated with something, and you're going to react, and it's going to blow up. So you have to find a way to say in perspective of Rabbi Fran's story, you know what? It really doesn't bother me. And it really doesn't bother you. It really doesn't bother you. You decide it doesn't bother you. Then move on with life. Okay, it doesn't bother you. If that's true, move on with life. Fine. Let's say it's not true. You haven't gotten there. So you're going to sound like a stupid idiot to say it bothers you. But you're going to say, well, say it bothers you. So let her address it. Those are 2 options. There's not a 3rd option. Now, you don't have to say it while you're in the moment of your kas, right? You know, and you can be embarrassed out of your wits. And so, you know, you can address, like, you know, I have to tell you I'm embarrassed out of my wits. Because, like, you know, really I should be bigger than this. But for whatever reason, it really gets under my skin. It bothers me tremendously. I don't know why it does. I've worked on myself. It just keeps rolling my head. I just have to tell you that when, you know, when you put the pen down like this, it just gets on my nerves. She says, really, what's your problem? Like, you know, I said, I don't know. You're right. Good question. I don't know. I'm not going to try to explain it. I have no excuse. But this is the way I work. And I would tell you, you want to try and prefer the first option, you know, because it does get a little more respect for the first option than the second option. Okay. Fine.
But every once it's out, and like Lisa, there's nothing to do about it. Like the cup, she just keeps putting the cup there. So then that's when you already got it out, now you just have to work on yourself?
Well, hopefully if you get it out, she will address it. Or you'll be able to talk it through. And usually when you talk it out, a lot of times, like, as you're saying, like, really? Doesn't bother me that much. You know what? Forget about it. Doesn't bother me that much anymore. Once you have to hide it, like, it's like, okay, whatever. I happen to have a different bushel that I use, or picture that I use, which different than Ray Fran's picture. Maybe it's a little bit
less gruesome.
A little bit less gruesome, not too much. I picture standing in Bezim Shemala.
Yeah, less intense.
That's pretty nice.
And the verse is saying, you know, you have this mitzvah, like Rama says, you mechabed your wife more than yourself, and you weren't mechabed her, you got upset at her. Rashi, it wasn't my fault. She put the cup in the wrong place. What are you after me? And the whole Bezin Shalmala would just start laughing. You were over the mitzvah defined in the Gemara and in the Rambam. I'll be mechabed your wife more than yourself because of a cup? Really? You have this deep laugh. Oh, everybody, and I picture it. You know what? It works wonders. It's perspective, my friend. It's perspective. Okay, good.
Trap door.
Okay. That's that angle. Okay, new angle. Okay.
Number six, I think.
Whatever number that is.
Four or five.
Okay. Ever hear of Will Rogers?
Yeah.
Will Rogers. You're probably not heard of Rogers. Rogers was a famous cowboy humorist, comedian, right? And his main act was he was very good at all the rodeo stuff, etc. But he would talk while he was doing it. And a bit of Lizzie Lasso, lassoing something, etc. And he would talk as he was doing it. He would say jokes. Most of his jokes were about making fun of himself, how bad he was at doing this type of stuff. And the audience loved it. Because the audience loves people who are comfortable laughing at themselves. So, humor is a very good thing when it's directed towards you. When it's directed towards your wife, it's horrible. Right? When you make fun of your wife, it sounds pretty funny, right? You know, no, it doesn't. So I'll give you an example of it like this. So, I have a wonderful son, Baruch Hashem. He's now 22 years old, but he wasn't always like that. At some point in time, he was like 4 or 5, and he was a trick. He would come with me to the davening in yeshiva. And, obviously a 5-year-old boy, which is very nice, he came with me. We would leave Shabbos morning very early, because we had to get here at 8 o'clock for davening. And, so we get up, and, I get feed him breakfast, and then we come to yeshiva, and he'd have some books with him, or he'd have some, something to eat, etc. And then, he would, daven a little bit, then he'd want to daven, etc. And for some reason or other, like, every time during Shemone Esrei, he would start, closing the book. I don't remember if it was even, closing the book too loud or moving the, rushing the pages or giggling, something like that, which would, of course, stare nobody but me. Right? Everyone else would be like, but I was like, he's staring at me in yeshiva, and it's so embarrassing, and I have to stop him, et cetera. Good, fine. So I had this deep, heart-to-heart talk with my 5-year-old son that can't do that during Shemone Esrei. And, he said, heart-to-heart talk, 5-year-old son, he gets it deeply, right? And the next one, Esther, he does the same thing again. So my first reaction, of course, was to get a little bit upset. I just spoke to him about this. Just spoke to him about this on the way to yeshiva. And we had this deep heart-to-heart talk, father to son, the very intelligent 5-year-old son. And, he is very intelligent, but still, And then it hit me this thought, which I found hilarious. I said, you know what, Rangel? You command such power and authority that even your 5-year-old son ignores you right after you spoke to him. And like, you know, really, Rangel? You know, like, who do you think you are? You know, like, how much a 5-year-old boy ignores you, your 5-year-old son ignores you right after you spoke to him. And it's the funniest thing in the world. Like, you know, you thought you're somebody kosher. You're a nobody. And I burst out laughing in the Moshe Manesu. You know what happened? I wasn't upset anymore. Once I started laughing, I wasn't upset anymore. Because Taka was pretty funny. I really think that I'm such a kosher guy that everybody should, you know, bow to my will. Yeah, who do you think you are, Rangel? Like, it was great. So don't take yourself too seriously, please.
How dare my wife not respect the will of God's gift to mankind? You know, Beryl, God's gift to mankind. That's my name. You know, everybody has, you know, after the letter, after the name, they have, you know, letters. I'm GGTTM, you know, God's gift to mankind. You know, like, you know, some of your licensed social worker, I am like, you know, like, really? Like, what do you think? You think you deserve it already? Like, what, you know, like, you know, I am so perfect. Like, you know, it's so funny. It's much and funny. Okay. I think it's pretty funny. Okay. You married your wife because you thought she's wonderful, and she still is wonderful. There's this horrible problem which is called people's malice of their chesronis. So you married her because of her malice, and now you find out they also are chesronis. So just focus on the fact that you married her because of the malice part, and that's how they come. That's one thought. Second thought is, I heard this from a young lady that I was dating. Not my wife. Actually, I was engaged to her, and then I was disengaged from her by her. So, it wasn't official yet, so that was, at least I didn't have to deal with that. She said, quoted the name of one of her rebbeim in seminary, which I don't remember the name. If she did say the name, I don't remember. She said the name, but I don't remember the name. Okay, so he said that you marry a person because the person has, you know, miles A, B, and C. You married about a few years, you realize, you know what, they don't really have A, or B, or C. But they have X, Y, and Z, and that's why you married them. Okay, interesting thought. Think about that. Right. Why did you marry your wife? Because those miles, I don't really see those miles anymore. That's okay, but there are other miles that she has. The Russian realized that you were not mature enough to recognize the miles of X, Y, and Z yet. So you thought A, B, and C were miles. So she had A, B, and Z. You know, she didn't, but that's okay. But she had X, Y, and Z, that's why you married her. Huh. So let's go to the next one is like this. it connects together. Rav Elbel says that Shalom Bayis is the first a person's first big but challenge in Bitochen. Shalom Bayis said, your first big challenge in Bitochen. What's the Bitochen element? Why is it a challenge in Bitochen? Challenge in meters. He says, what's the opposite of Bitochen? The opposite of Bitochen is control. Right? Men like control. Right? If you give a choice, most men, not all of them, many men, if you give them a choice between being in the driver's seat or being in the passenger seat and their wife should drive, they prefer that they should drive because they like being in control. That's a very simplistic manifestation of that reality. Well, bitachon means, where does bitachon kick into reality? When you're not in control. You know, a bacher's life is pretty much under his control. He can decide what he wants to do, decide, you know, how he wants to do it. He might have difficulty, be better or worse, but pretty much he gets to call the shots in his life. All of a sudden you have this person where you can't control. And so you say, you know what? And everyone's in control to start with. Russia's in control. And he put this person here. I mean, they have to learn how to deal with it. And he knows what he's doing.
And if you put him there, it means that this person is perfectly matched to me for my nisyonos that I need to live in life. And he knows what he's doing. He knows what's good for me. And she belongs here, and I belong here together with her. And to not say it here, but to say it here, is a challenge of Shalom Bayis. Not to say it in your head, but to say it in your heart. It's a fascinating thought from a Volvo. See, in America, for A, B, and C, you remember X, Y, and Z, because you know, you realize that the person had a reason why this person is the person who's with you. It's a beautiful thought. Okay. So sometimes, you know, you find something challenging, so the answer is like, you know what? The person knows what he's doing, and that's exactly what I needed at this moment. I needed this challenge. And who better than my wife could give me that challenge? Okay. Focus on the fact that, you know, in general, our goal in life is to be happy people. People have a mistake about happiness that they think, you know, that if everything is perfect, I'll be happy. That's not a kunst to be happy. If everything's perfect, I'll be happy. That's not a kunst to be happy. The kunst to be happy is when things are not perfect. So I think I've shared this with some of you at some point in my life. When I moved to Silver Spring, Maryland from Tulsa Shiva after being in Tulsa Shiva for 23 years, there were certain elements which I found a little bit difficult, adjusting, etc. And I was back in Cleveland after Elul came, you know, summertime. Spent Elul in Silver Spring, Elul Yom Neroyim, which was the first time in my life that I had not been in Tulsa Shiva for Yom Neroyim. First time I had experienced anything other than Tulsa Shiva Yom Neroyim, because I wasn't from before I went to Tulsa Shiva. So my only picture of Yom Neroyim was Tulsa Shiva, and I'm picturing the Mizrach Bat to Tulsa Shiva, you know, and I'm thinking like, I'm like, what are you doing on the Mizrach Bat? You know, like, really? You know, like, you know, what am I doing here? I was like, I can't believe I'm here. Anyway, so I was frustrated and to some extent. And there were certain things which were going, you know, I was having difficult, etc. So Sukkot Ben Hazman and Baruch Hashem was back in Cleveland. I went to visit the Rishi Reb Chaim. Zichro Lebracha, and he says to me, please go get this. How's it going? So I started crunching. You know, this is not good. So three sentences in, he says, 80%? Is it 80% good? So I thought, yes. Gefinzich nit den Leben besser von 80%. You don't get better than your percent in life.
That's great. I like it.
It's a great quote.
then he says to me, "No, what the Leland?" You know, as I told him, he says, "Ah, was it Zalman Kasha?" And that was the end of the conversation. That was it. Like, you know, no more kvetching, talk and learning. And he would not let me kvetch anymore. Kvetching was done. You got your 2.5 sentences out. You know, that's it. It's 80% good. There's nothing to kvetch about because life is good.
This was
Reb Chaim Stein. So I'm here almost 20 years. Came in 1997. I've lived 20 years on the 80% rule, and I'm a very happy person. Baruch Hashem.
Does it really max out at 80%, or can get better?
It can get better, actually.
Okay.
But you're really excited because if you only expect the 80%, you get more than that. Like, it's really good, right? On that point, I tell guys right before the chuppah, you know, or but 2 days before, whatever it is, I tell them that, you know, you have to mekabel in your mind that something during the chasm will go not the way you want it. So you have to accept, picture that and accept it. Now, Moreshach, if it happens, you're already excited, you accepted it. If it doesn't happen, you're really happy. Like, you know, Moreshach, you know. But chances are there'll be something which will go not the way you want it. You know, this person was to get this key, but didn't get the key, but this person didn't show up. This person, you wanted this to happen before that happened before this. You know, right? My chasna was on a Sunday afternoon in October, at the end of October. October 30th. And on the steps of the Oyev Sholem congregation, 16th Street in D.C. And I very much didn't want the people to wait We sat outside. The wife said, "Well, it's you know, it's the end of October. It's, you know, it wasn't cold, but it wasn't warm. And the sun was out, Baruch Hashem." But they didn't want people, you know, a lot of times ladies go outside right away. You know, the men to make a minyan for mincha, you know, people will have to wait. So I asked everybody, please, there'll be enough time after the chuppah to make the mincha afterwards. Please, mincha should be after the chuppah. Mincha should be after the chuppah. Mincha should be after the chuppah. Of course, when was mincha? Before the chuppah. Right? That's the way it goes. So I got upset. Because nobody told me this thought. Like, you know, like I asked every, I can't believe they did it. I was so, there's people waiting. And they just don't realize, they don't think of everybody else. Okay, Reinhold, get a hold of yourself. Try and relax. Focus. Forget about them. You know, focus on the chuppah, which I did, Baruch Hashem. We got married on the. If you ever driven on 16th Street, you'll see that, you know, Olam Shalom has this gorgeous facade, gorgeous front, facing out towards 16th Street, and it has a large amount of steps, like steps, and then a platform of steps and a platform going down to the street. So we got married by the street. And we walked down to our chuppah. That's what it says. You have to walk down to your chuppah, right? And they tell me that there was a traffic jam on 16th Street. People like stopping to watch what was going on, because like you have a few hundred people outside, you know, and this, you know, this bride coming down, etc. So Kitzer, so I get to the top step, and they start playing whatever song I chose that they should play for me walking down. And I heard the first chord. Next thing I knew, my cow was there. I had space into a different world, and so I wasn't upset anymore about the mincha, because like, what's mincha? Where am I? You know, like, so, you know, you sort of, some people, you know, are a little more, you know, with it and down to earth than I was. I was definitely in space cadet mode. I've seen three modes of people walking down to the chuppah. There's people walk down to the chuppah and they're like very serious. It looks like they're being dragged. That's why the parents walk with them. They're being dragged. Right? And there's people like dance down to the chuppah. And there's people like me, like, where am I? So three approaches to the chuppah. Okay, 80%. Okay. So, accept up front that things are not. It's 80%. Life. Do you really think that this person is like your slave? Like, what do you think? That they're always going to give it to you? They're always going to want exactly what you want? Really? Like, let's be realistic. The human being with all of their needs, all their emotional needs, and they're different than you. And you took the two of you under the same roof, 24/7, 365. The nature of the beast is that there's going to be things which are not going to go perfect. That's just accepted up front. And then, you know, once you don't focus on that, like, you know, this is not, you know, you're not going to get upset about it. I expected it not to be perfect, so I'm upset. My wife's line is that only Kodesh Baruch Hu is perfect. Nor the Bar Elim is perfect. Like, nobody else is perfect. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Like, I never expected it to be perfect. So I'm not upset. You're not perfect. You know what? Wow, I didn't expect it to happen anyway. So like, well, you know, what's the big schmitz? Okay. From that vantage point, you can next move to the next thought is focus on the fact, the schus, that you're married. And you have, Baruch Hashem, a marriage which, for the most part, is perfect, is running well, and you have a wonderful wife. And if you focus on those things, the perspective is a positive perspective. Okay. Next one. V'yeh da'ol d'mascha v'ishtoi. Have you ever had this experience where somebody does something to you, and it's just like you can't believe they did that, and you can't imagine why they did that. And then you speak to the person and you hear their perspective and you say, you know what? I get it. Ever happened to you? Ever had that experience? Right? Mm-hmm. So once you understand somebody, the barrier is removed. Vayeda adam eschavi. So he knew her. If you understand her, if you have das, if you know her, if you really get to know her, you understand who she is, all of her background, all of her personality, all of her mindless, all of her chesronis, all of her challenges in life, right? All of her fears, right? All of her joys, you understand where she's coming from. You won't be upset anymore. That's the Adam Schav Ishtar. So that's the goal. The goal is to know her, to truly know her. And then, you know, which we call that, you know, the idea of, you know, the Rangel's family, we talk about the idea of Ayin Tova. You know, I can see it with the, I can look at it in a positive way. Because, you know, I can judge the person in a positive way. I can see it with a positive way. Because I see where they're coming from. I'd be the exact same way as they would be under the circumstances, like that, you know? Okay. Next. Not, you know, really this belongs being up number one, but is tefillah. Daven l'Kadosh Baruch Hu for help. You know what? You're set us on the Russian. Please help me deal with this properly. Please help me, you know, focus on the positive, which is over here, etc. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Miller Zatzal has the following analogy. He says, so imagine, I think apparently the play, Julius Caesar. You've all read Julius Caesar?
Of course,
yeah.
Somewhere.
Et tu,
Brute? Okay, so there's one scene over there. Now, so imagine, right, that you're playing Brutus in Julius Caesar. Right? So there's a scene where Brutus takes his dagger and he plunges it into Caesar's heart. Right? Right? And you've done this 1,000 times. You did it, you know, they put it on every day, twice a day, you know? And you've been doing this for like 3 years straight on Broadway. And it was the most boring scene you've ever lived in your life. So in the middle of the scene, you go, oh, what's going to happen to your job? Osha, right? So we have something to act. So he says, so if something bothers you and you're not in the mood of acting correctly, there's no problem. Go into the bathroom and stay there until you're ready to come out and act properly.
Ever
heard of that? Yeah,
that's hilarious.
Okay? You have to act sometimes. So you're not in the mood. So what? You know what? Act anyway. Because you know what? You'll find that after a little bit of time it passes, it won't bother you so much anymore. You'll be able to move on. But right now it's not worth responding to it because you know you're not going to get it right. So act. And if you can't act, stay in the bathroom until you're ready to act. Unquote. Okay. He's a lot of fun listening to. Okay. I once heard this from a person named Rabbi J. Salad. Lives in Yerushalayim. S-A-L-I-D, not S-A-L-A-D. Okay. So Jay and I go back.
Sounds crisp.
30 plus years ago. The man is fascinating. He's from Memphis. No, he's not from Memphis. He lives in Yerushalayim now. But he's Rosh Kollel there, Rosh Yeshiva there. Guy is like brilliant off the charts. Like, got a photograph every type, like, you know. He went to public school. Like, you know, he used to learn with like a tutor on the side. He used to dive my shirish shul. He comes today. What do we say? I'm only working at Chosh Mishpah now. We're all, you know, Kim and Simon Kufiat Aleph. Like, you know, from the beginning straight. You know, like on himself, by himself, you know, that type, you know.
Huh.
So, he was once officiating by a chasna. I don't remember whose chasna was, but he was officiating by a chasna. And he spoke under the chuppah, like, you know, the nice out of town chasna. He spoke under the chuppah, the rabbi speaks under the chuppah. Right? And he says, Yom Kippur, Chos and Kala, they had a chasna like Yom Kippur. Right? Yom Kippur is the day that goes down as the day of the Luchos Shniyos. That's like, as it were, the Russians like re. Connecting to Klai Yisrael. He's marrying Klai Yisrael. Give him the Luchas. Gave it the Luchas. That's the ring. Why Yom Kippur? Because Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness. This is the foundation of your marriage is the ability to forgive. Yes, she did something wrong. Yes, whatever. But forgive. It also means to say I'm sorry, which is the second half, because Russia forgives when we say I'm sorry. So, but it wasn't my fault. I was right. She was wrong. Well, did it hurt her? Yes. So you're wrong or hurting her. But you were wrong or hurting her. So follow that. Okay. We spoke about this idea of not testing the relationship. You got to believe in the relationship. So I believe that a lot of dining lechavskus means, you know, a lot of what happens, I react, you know, something happened, oive, it indicates, and that's, you know, like horrible, you know, and then the mind starts racing, you know, well, if this is true, then that is true, you know, like we spoke about, you know, he forgot to call and say that he's coming home late means he doesn't love me, right?
Obviously.
Right. Like, which we spoke of, we explained why from a woman's perspective that's a valid thought process. Right? Right? And she could be, and then, you know, and then he comes home after, like, you know, a half an hour beyond. Nowadays there's no excuse. I mean, you know, just, you know, like, once upon a time I understand, like, you know, like, the Chazon Ish writes in his letter to the Chosson, he says that before you leave the house you have to tell her where you're going and when you'll be back. And if you're not going to be able to have time, you have to contact her and tell her that you're going to be late. The Chazon Ish writes this already. Right? Like, nobody wants to excuse you, but you have a cell phone. I forgot to call you. I don't know if you forgot to call me. Like, you know. Right? But she said, you know, I was so worried about you. I thought, you know, you're homeless someone in the news. I thought I was ready to call the hospital, you know, and check to see if there was an accident. Like, I'm like, whoa! Like, you know, the emotional part. But that's not logical. But that's not the issue. And then you know, she's so relieved to see you, Baruch Hashem. And she's so upset at you, she pops you over the head with a pillow. Like, I thought you were so relieved to see me. Yeah, but how can you do this to me? Right? It's the pocket of this is the primary being in her life. Ignoring her, which is a statement that, you know, she's not important to them. So we read a lot of things into things. Don't read anything into anything, please. Just believe in the relationship. Right? So, why did she forget to cook supper? Because she's upset at me, and no, because she forgot to cook supper. Like, you know, like, why? Because, you know, and all there's deep-seated reasoning, there's a psychological, a psychedelic, and I'm reading, Rabbi Gold's guide to psychoanalysis, you know, well, it must be the reason why she knows, because she has problems with trouble, you know. Don't read anything to anything, please. Just, it happened, move on with life.
And you are supposed to try to understand the, like, read.
Right, understand.
In between the lines.
Yes, but at the time you're dealing with the emotions, dealing with the issues.
Don't let it run away.
Don't escalate. Okay. Speaking about that, that just reminds me of a thought, which I have an absolutely wonderful relationship with my father-in-law. Absolutely wonderful relationship with my father-in-law. But he's a father-in-law, I'm a son-in-law. And he has his opinions, he has his thought processes, and he happens to be a very scrappy person. He grew up in the streets of Washington, D.C. as a kid. He learned how to be pretty tough. See, he loves a good fight. So, my wife and I made up this rule, coming for, you know, you come and spend like, you know, 2 days, 2 weeks of Yom Tov together, you know. It's called don't bait and debate. No baiting. You know, what do you think about this? You know, like, wave the bait in front of him, like, you know, make him react. And don't debate. You know, says, you know, I think, you know, so, yeah, that's interesting thought. I hear that. Like, it's very hard to have an argument with something like that. It's horribly hard to have an argument with something like that. Now, what's the wise, you know, like, you know, he says, I enjoy Good Fridays. I know that, you know, it's good me to, you know, like, you know, like, you know, I try to get you, lure you into something and get you upset about something. I say, no, you know, I know you do. He says, does it work? Sometimes. That's true. You know, like most of the time it doesn't, you know. Like, and I just don't want it, because at the beginning I did, and it was horrible. It was just horrible. Like, you know, we'd end up having this fight about, like, why are we fighting about this thing? After, like, why did I myself get upset about this? You know, I think people in yeshiva, you know, really spend too much time in yeshiva. You know, they should spend more, like, okay. You know, that's a good point. You know, I think probably your Bible writes probably a little too long in yeshiva. But like, you know, but don't you think, you know, that it's an issue? Maybe, you know. Like, you know, I'm not the most unopinionated person in the world, but just like, you know, and now, like, you know, last year, like, Ellie, what do you think about something? I said, you know, and I'll say, you know, because he trusts my opinion, because he wants to hear what I have to say, because I'm not fighting with him. Or once in a while, I ask him, like, Daddy, like, you know, we discussed this before, and you already have your opinion. Like, why are you asking me again? And I says, I want to see what you're going to say. I said, no. You know, like, you know.
You go there.
No, don't bathe in the debates. It's very important, the kudah with in-laws. Okay.
Ever?
What?
Did you never have a debate with them about anything?
It's not worth it. What do you accomplish? I mean, you know, if they don't, if you see that, you know, and I haven't. I have this horrible meeting with my wife. Usually she's right. And usually I admit it that she's right. You know, I can say, you know, you should have done that. You know, you're right. I shouldn't have. She hates it. It's like horrible. Like, you know, she's upset about something, and I say, you know, yeah, you're right. I really should do better. I'll try to do better next time. And she said it last time. She said, you're right. You know, let's see if we can think. Well, let's see if we can think of some way to do it. I'll do it better next time. She'll, you know, she wants to, like, you know, let out her frustration and tell me how upset she is, but it's like she can't do that because, like, you know, I'm like, I'm not arguing with her because usually she's right. The Taka didn't do it right. I didn't act rightly vis-a-vis her or vis-a-vis so-and-so, you know, or whatever. I mean, I'm not perfect, so I admit it, and she finds it very frustrating.
So what she says to do,
never admit to being.
For some bites,
you know, I mean, like, I'm not doing it just like, you know, why I said, you know, you're just doing this just to get out of the fight. I said, no, I seriously, I think you have a good point. So why have you forgotten this? You know what? That's a good question. Let's think about that. You know, and let's talk about it. You know, what's my deep underlying psychological problem with rendering from changing? I don't know, like, you know, I'm working on it. You know, have I gotten better over the years? Yes, I have gotten better over the years. It says, am I perfect? No. Will I get there eventually? I hope so. You know, I'll get there. Okay, let's live a happy every day. Yeah, let's do that. And the conversation ends right there. Like, you know, it's like, I'm not saying there aren't times I get upset about things, but, you know, as I get older, like, I realize, like, what, like, I used to defend my position and why I did it, like, very vigorously. Because I didn't want to lose respect in her eyes. Right? Why do you give excuses? Because you don't want to be a bad person. So I didn't really mean to do it. I didn't understand that. You know, and what you said, and I thought that's what you wanted, and it wasn't my fault. So now I'm not a bad person. Do you get more respect for admitting that you're wrong, or for explaining why you were right and giving excuses? Which do you get more respect for?
Admitting you're wrong.
Absolutely. Admitting you're wrong. Right? Right. So why do I want to give excuses? Commits me. Correct. Why should I give excuses if I can get more respect the other way? It's just like, right? And worst of all, the problem is, like, I trust the relationship. So, like, I'm not trying to. If I'm worried about the relationship, so I have to explain why it wasn't really my fault. I didn't really mean it, and therefore I'm not such a bad person. Therefore, you still like me, and therefore we should stay married. And like, you know, I have this whole, like, thought process going on where I have to save the marriage by explaining why I forgot to go to the store. You know, I'm over exaggerating a little bit, but, like, you know, but that's what happens. Like, we're not going anywhere. Everything's fine. And I forgot to go to the store, and I shouldn't have gone to the store, and I feel bad that I forgot to go to the store. I'll try to do it next time. And yes, I forgot to go to the store, and you really told me it was very important, and I forgot, and I apologize. Like, okay. Last one on this page. called tznius. So tznius doesn't mean what you think it means. Actually, I have one thing after tznius. Okay. So where do you find tznius? We find Matur Alech Rashi says that, you know, that Bilam saw that in Piskei Olam Mechulonim Zekhazeh, and therefore he was all the other to give him a bracha, all the believer to give him a bracha. So I know that there was a mashgiach in yeshiva would give shalom bayis classes for people who married, you know, chasanim for shana rishona and for 5 years marriage. So this was in the 5 year marriage class. He says, the grass is greener on the other side is a horribly dangerous thing. Don't look in somebody else's tent. You know, in their tent, like, wow, you know, kids are dressed. Imagine, like, you know, you're in the midbar, like, you know, in your tent, like, you know, the kids always walk around in diapers. You know, they're screaming and they're yelling, and, you know, the house is, like, you know, Ibrakaranish, like, you know, there's stuff piled on the table, right? You know, and another tent, look at that, you know, like, the table is clean, the kids are dressed menschlich. Can you imagine that? Don't look in somebody else's tent. You have no idea what's going on in somebody else's tent. And the Russian didn't put you into that tent, he put you in your tent. So it's irrelevant to look at somebody else's tent. That's the news. Don't keep looking over your shoulder. Like, you know, I have a lot of guys here, I think they have, like, looking over the shoulder syndrome. Like, I'm not really learning so well. So why do you think so? Because someone's learning better than me. Like, why are you looking at so-and-so? Like, why are you defining yourself by somebody else? And from the vantage point of being many, many, many years in the world of dealing with issues and counseling, I can tell you that nobody's tent is perfect. And with tents which look perfect, sometimes even less perfect. And, you know, that's the way it is. Nobody's perfect, and that's it. We never claim to be perfect. Okay. Rabbi Friend has a fascinating exercise that he suggests. I'm Rabbi Friend, I'm Rabbi Krohn, or Rabbi Krohn, I'm Rabbi Friend. I don't remember any which one it was anymore. But I think it was Rabbi Friend, I'm Rabbi Friend, I'm Rabbi Krohn. So Rabbi Krohn says a story, which Rabbi Friend said over, about a couple in Queens, that's why I think it's a Rabbi Krohn story to start with, I'm not sure they were Chassid Kala, or they were married a little while. I think they were married for a little while. I think they were having problems like communicating. So they decided to do the following. They decided to make a list. Each one was going to make a list of the 20 most important things that they thought their spouse wanted in the marriage. An order of priority.
Right? 20 is a lot of things.
Okay. Well, you do a 10, hold on. Right? So let's say, for example, the wife put down, you know, the first thing was that her husband wants supper on the table as soon as he comes home. Husband looked at and said it? Yep. It's number 15 by me. And what they found was that basically they had everything wrong. Like, you know, then they gave each other the list and they annotated the list, you know, in red pen. You know, when you put one, I would mark as number 7, you know, etc. And it drove home how much they need to learn to understand each other, and it also gave them clarity about the other person. So it was a great lesson. Then they took the paces, and they had a glass-covered table in the kitchen, and they put the papers under the glass. So every night by supper, they could see the papers and remind me, like, you know, how much we still have to learn to understand each other, and how much they could keep focused on each other's priorities. It was great. Okay, it's a lot of fun. Pretty funny also.
And this is a suggestion?
Yeah, why not? Okay. Last thought over here. Okay. So the name of this thought is Goldberg and Goldberg Limited Liability Corporation, LLC. Goldberg and Goldberg LLC, right? Goldberg and Goldberg, right? And Goldberg LLC. So have you heard of Goldberg and Goldberg? Goldberg and Goldberg were two partners that got together, and they decided that they want to make a lot of money together. Okay? So Goldberg is very good at, you know, speaking to people, bringing in business, sales, etc., etc. Goldberg, on the other hand, is a great accountant, you know, organized, meticulous, getting things done, etc. They're a great partnership. One day Goldberg realizes that he can make more money without Goldberg. So since the whole purpose of living, being together with Goldberg is to make money, and he can make more money without not being with Goldberg, so that was the end of the partnership. Okay. So, some people's marriages are Goldberg and Goldberg Limited Liability Corporation. I want to be happy. You want to be happy. Well, since you want to be happy, let's get together and make each other happy. One of them realizes, you know what, I'd be more happy without you. So why am I staying in this marriage? That's not why you get married. You don't get married to be happy. You get married to build something. You get married to build a home. You get married to build a place which you will work together, each person bringing their strengths, to create something which is greater than the sums of the two parts. A place where you can raise children, a case you can do a Avodas Hashem. That's your goals. So sometimes you're not happy. Okay, but that wasn't the goal. As long as you're moving towards the goal, and the goal is taking place, so then we're good. But I'm not happy. Okay. That wasn't the definition. But some people get married because they want to be happy. And when they realize, you know what? Marriage is a lot of work, and it's not so easy, and they're not so happy. And that's when things start falling apart. Okay, so hopefully your marriage will not be Goldberg and Goldberg, Limited Liability Corporation.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Yeah, you're supposed to be happy, no?
Happiness is
that's relative.
Happiness is a byproduct. I skipped one over here.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Johnson.
Okay. And this is a little bit of a challenging one. Right?
The other ones are easy, so.
Right. Again, I think you don't have to use all of them all the time. Like, what am I supposed to do right now? Like, one second here. Just like 17, the trial number 17.
I think Will Rogers is a good
what are the options?
Breakdown, what's going on right now? Do you see these pants?
Listen, try it. You never know. You remember, if your goal is to understand the person, to make them happy, to attend to their needs, your focus is on the person, so you're not busy thinking about how much you're not being happy. And strangely enough, a byproduct of doing that many times is that you're happy because you're giving, and it develops love, it develops care. So every time I think about what would my wife like me to do under these circumstances, I'm developing in myself a muscle called giving. So the focus is the other person. Fine, let's just touch a few things over here. So in-laws, we touched on them a little bit. My father-in-law had a great line when we were engaged. And my father-in-law served in the Navy in World War II in the South Pacific. Yeah, it sounds like cool. Yeah, he lost some of his best friends were killed. He made it back alive. It's not, you know, this war is not anything where near what the movies make it out to be. You know. So he says in the Navy there's something called a shakedown cruise. Ever heard of a shakedown cruise? So every time you make a new boat, they can't send the boat out right for usage right away because there's always things which aren't going. So take it out for a cruise. The first cruise is called the shakedown cruise to see what nuts they didn't tighten properly and what, you know, buttons they forgot to program, whatever. They take it and they come back. Usually they move up most of the kinks. They take it out for a lot of times, depending how complicated the machine is, the ship is. It'll be for longer or shorter, etc. They come back and they fix up these things. It says every marriage starts with a shakedown cruise. So he was referring to vis-a-vis himself and myself, not vis-a-vis my wife. And that's true. You know, you're learning. These people, you have to respect them. They're older than you. They produce something which is very, very, you know, important to you. They brought your wife into this world and they raised her. And they have their version of how they want things to happen. And they're the nicest people in the world, but, you know, they still see things different than you sometimes. And finding the balance of how to interact with that is something that's very uncomfortable. And you learn how to deal with it. You learn how to get, you know, understand, like, what pushes their buttons and what, you know, how to make them feel that you appreciate, and you do appreciate, you know, who they are and what they are, etc. Okay. That's in-laws are a sugya. You know, I just want to point out, you know, that your in-laws are, sometimes you'll have a sikhsuk between yourself and your in-laws, and you want to share with your wife. And for her, they're her parents. And she might agree that you're right, but it's painful for her. You have to understand that. Okay. Money. Money is potentially a challenging issue when it comes to home buyers.
What money?
That's true. Different people have different attitudes towards money. And you'll find that, you know, your attitude is not necessarily your wife's attitude. So we mentioned way back in the second session the relationship of a captain and a first mate. Right? A captain wants his first mate to be a very competent person because he needs to rely on the first mate to get a lot of things done. If the captain will second guess the first mate every time he does something, the first mate will become incompetent very quickly. Because since they need the validation of the captain, whatever they're doing is being questioned, they'll become dysfunctional. Right. So I had a couple who the husband was very money conscious. And he's a very good shopper. Like, you know exactly that. Don't buy tomatoes over here because, you know, they rip you off for tomatoes. And the tomatoes so much better over there, that type of a thing. Every time his wife would come home from the store, he would ask, like, where'd you buy the tomatoes? You bought over there? I can't believe you bought over there. They're so much more expensive. Like, what were you thinking? At some point, he realized he's having some small bias problems. And in my conversation with him, I said, I realized, like, you know, I asked him, what's more important to you? Saving some money or having a happy, confident wife? He said, happy, confident wife. I said, that's a good answer. I'm happy you said that. Right? Although we'd have a lot more problems. Right? So then, how much money is it worth to you to have a happy, confident wife? Whatever it takes. Says, okay, so every time she spends more on tomatoes, you're spending money on having a happy, confident wife when you keep your mouth shut. So that was interesting. It gave him perspective a little bit. So Chabad Chaim writes this. Chabad Chaim says you have something called a shalom fund. Right? He says we pay a lot of money for an esrog. People spend $100 for an esrog. $1,000 for tefillin, thousands of dollars for some nice pair of tefillin. Says, how much are you willing to spend on shalom, on peace? So you mark up in your mind up front that you're going to be spending money on shalom, which means if your wife buys an extra dress, and, you know, you really can't afford it right now, okay, and, you know, and she knows that, but she just, like, she really wanted it. And, you know, and you're really nervous. You listen to the checkbook, and the checkbook, you know, is like negative, and you have this big bill coming up, and the boss just told you that, you know, he's giving you, he's downsizing, he might have to let you go, and, you know, and Aunt May is, you know, just had a heart attack, and, you know, like, so, like, you know, you might have to go visit her in the hospital, that's gonna, yeah. And she bought this extra dress. So You say, "Wow, I'm so happy about your dress." I'm so that makes you, I'm sure, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy that you should have a dress. I'm investing in it. Even with all the things, I still bought an Esther for Sukkot. Yeah, okay. So then you can spend money on a dress, because it's a shalom. That being said, it doesn't mean you can't work on trying to find the name of Kashava, but it has to be done not under pressure. The conversation has to be done not, you know, where, like, you know, you're all worked up about, you know, what's going to be. Fine. Going back to, we discussed this idea of attention to your wife, and they spoke about, like, what's important to her. You might have to ask her sometimes. That's okay. Right? It's a profound thought process. I'm not sure what she would like me to do right now, so ask her. Now, she might say, you know, I would like you to figure it out yourself. I says, you know what? I also like to figure it out myself. But right now, till I'm there, I would like to really get input, make sure that I'm focusing on what your emotional needs are. It's going back to that point. When you agree with somebody, you heard them, and you repeat it back to them. You heard them, you validated them, and if it's not just lip service, like, you know, yeah, I just say this, let's get them off my back, type of a thing. But you really are trying to work on it. You'll get a lot of respect for that. Okay. Women have to keep growing. Men have to keep growing after marriage. Life is hard. It gets very busy. If you want to make sure that your wife is still being able to grow, you have to make sure she has opportunities to do that. Nowadays, there's so many different things to listen to, or to classes, shirim to go to, or shirim to listen to online. But she can't do it when she's exhausted and take care of the baby every night. So, dear, the 3 o'clock feeding, I'll take care of. We have milk put away in the freezer. You know, if she's nursing, you know, she put away extra milk in the freezer. Yeah, formula, you know, that horrible thing called formula. Someone, you know, just as an aside on that issue, our society has made this big. Become very big, but nowadays become the push is like the importance of nursing as opposed to using formula, because it's much healthier and better for the child, etc. Like everything, you take it to an extreme, it's not healthy. I mean, I happen to be in a gay brother, I raised 2 fine children on formula. I think they've been welcoming me for the difficulties they had in their early childhood. You know, the main thing is that you think about your child, you bond with your child, spend time with your child, you learn to understand your child, you take care of your child. Right? But the society has made such a big negation that a woman who does not nurse is considered a pariah almost in some communities. Like, you're not nursing? What's going to be with your child? He's going to grow up so underdeveloped because he didn't have that emotional bond with his mother from nursing. That is what women pressure themselves about. So, it's hard to nurse and fast at the same time. The child is taking a lot of liquid out of the person. So it's Yom Kippur, and, so there's a heter of, a mother eating. It brought down aloha because when that was the only source of food for the nursing for the child, this becomes the function for the child. Nowadays, it's kind of the function for the mother. She's going to have a heart attack if we tell her to use formula instead. what's the kind of the function? It's over here. Okay. I said mine on that one. you're going to have to make sure that she has time to grow. That means you learn something together. That means that you prepare something to say by the Shabbos suitors. That means you take care of the kids so she can go to a shir. That means you encourage her to make a chavrusa. That means, whatever it is, you learn the sefer together by the Shabbos suitor. You learn the sefer together by the supper table. You talk about the bottom points, which need clarification. You share deep Torah. You discuss avodas Hashem. Okay. That being said, tznius, and now we're talking about the standard understanding of tznius, is the man's responsibility. A woman will do what her husband wants. Christ says, my wife is wearing, not tznius clothing. So you live in a community where that's what everybody wears. But so it's a challenge. It is a challenge for the woman. Right? And the man says, I demand that, that's not going to work either. But if a man can validate and understand the challenge that she has and the emotions that she's going through, just validating them takes away a large amount of the challenge. My husband understands what I'm going through, but we both recognize that they have to be more careful. Now, this is in general true in parenting. If you're looking for parenting styles, that being aware of a child's challenges and empathizing with them, and then moving on. Right. Fine. Charity starts at home. So, it's really exciting, a lot of fun to have, guests for Shabbos suitors, etc. So some men happen to be very, very facile in the kitchen. Not all women appreciate that. They want to be the person who's providing the meals, etc. But that's a burden on them when there's a lot of guests. So the husband offers, and the woman's uncomfortable with it. So you just have to, learn to accept that. That this is, I could go into the kitchen and do X, Y, and Z, but, my wife doesn't want me to. She wants to be the person who's the provider of that for her family. And that means we're limited in the amount of guests we can have because it's too much pressure on her. She's working. She's raising kids. She's just had a baby a little while back, She's having a difficult time getting back to herself emotionally, which can happen after a birth. And she's just not in the mood of having guests. Or having a lot of guests. Or having, last-minute guests when she wasn't, psych herself up for it. Hi there, my name is Yaakov Herman. I just brought home 25 people. Your wife is not Mrs. Yaakov Herman, and you're not Yaakov Herman. So, somebody one time pointed out to, I think, Rip Scheinberg, that our women nowadays, don't have the same serious nefesh for Torah. You have these stories about three of the generations, the husbands would leave Motzi Shabbos, they'd be home for Shabbos, Motzi Shabbos they would leave, and they would sleep, take a loaf of bread with them, and their cup. They'd go to the shul, and they would have, they would sleep in the base medrash the whole week, they'd sleep on the benches, sit and learn the whole week. And they would have, there was hot tea there in the, without sugar, there was hot tea and bread, and that was the way. They'd come over Shabbos, an hour or two before Shabbos, wash themselves up, go to the mikvah. Friday night they would learn with the kids, to test the boys, etc. They'd spend Shabbos together with the wife, once Shabbos they would leave again, Where's the serious nefesh of the women? So Scheinberg said, okay, are you ready to spend, eat one loaf of bread as all your food for the whole week, and sleep on the benches in base medrash? And drink hot tea without sugar. When you are, you'll get a wife who's ready to do that too. Okay, what do you want? So yeah, but we want to have, like, you know, this beautiful home full of chesed, etc. You know, the first chesed is your wife and your kids. And that's a nice dream, and, you know, etc. But, you know, sometimes it's not the reality. And it might mean that 6 months or a year or 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, you're not really having too many guests. Right? At some point in your life, maybe you will, maybe you won't, you know. But this is the person that you're committed to and you're responsible for, and you need to focus on what her emotional needs are. You know, and you're like, I had a guy here in Yeshiva who told me after he was married for a little bit, he said, you know, when I was a bacher and a lot of my friends got married, I was really upset. Because, like, they never invited me for Shabbos service. And I sort of, like, you know, all my friends are married, like, all these Shabbos invitations, etc. I didn't get any. So now that I'm married, I understand. It's a tremendous pressure on a woman to have guests. You know, and she has guests, you know, and she wants to spend time with her husband, wants some time to just have a nice, simple, relaxed meal together. Wife and I made up when we got married that, barring, you know, extenuating circumstances, we have guests one meal only. Another meal is a private meal between the two, but for the two of us or for the family. And we still do that today. This is 33 years of counting. Right. Friday night we have guests, Shabbos day we don't have guests. There's a bunch of the guy, he's going to starve, he's going to where to go, you know. But if I could find somebody else for him, I would find somebody else for him. I will not have him. Shabbos day is for my wife and my daughter. You know, for the family. It's not the stories you read about Henny Machlis, you know, when she had, like, a, you know, 40 billion people, you know, Friday night, and then she had 17 billion people Friday Shabbos day, and she was always happy, and, you know, and the kids turned out to be the most relaxed and loved and, you know, cared for children in the world, you know, Okay, there's an article book about her. Chicken, you know, what's it called? Love with the Moon and Chicken Soup, or something like that, you know. Something like that, didn't have the title. Chicken Soup with the Moon and Love. I'm one of the chickens up below. I don't know, something like that. You know, the order, what goes first. Right. It's a beautiful story, but it's nothing to do with you. You're not Rabbi Machlis, and she ain't, your wife ain't Henny Machlis. You know, Allah Shalom. You know, and there can be times where you need to have a private time. You know, my shver, a very sweet thing. He like when all the kids moved out, everybody, and they moved to Baltimore, I sure bought myself my sugar a set of china, very expensive china, a set for china for two. And that's what they use when they didn't have any other guests. They had their set of china, cobalt china, it's very expensive china. My sugar was a person. My sugar used to bring home when he lived in Silver Spring. There was a lot of people that didn't have places. Every Shabbos, my sugar was bringing home guests. Every Shabbos, Friday night and Shabbos. You know, I'm sure you came from that generation, you know, like, you know, during the war, so the refugees, you know. So you have guests, that's part of life, you know. Our wife's from a different generation. Our woman's from a different generation. Probably now, my sugar was 92 when she passed away. She passed away a year ago, so probably by now it's probably four generations hence from that world, you know, three generations hence from that world, you know. And we are cream puffs, and so are our wives. Wonderful people, but you can't do it. And you know, and it's such a pressure because the wife thinks the husband really would like to have guests, and he's upset if he doesn't have guests. And, you know, she feels bad that she let him down that he doesn't have guests, and then she feels bad the fact that he doesn't understand the challenges that she has. You know, and there's like this whole volcano, right? Which, you know, and we read all these, and you know, the same way there's the Gedolim books, you know, they have their stories. And they probably can do they sometimes do more damage than they do good, because they don't really explain the challenges and the emotions and the ups and downs that go with these things. Right. So, you know, the stories about the what was it called, the holy woman, you know, wherever, you know, that this tzedekas and Yerushalayim and this other tzedekas, you know, they're not covered to women, they're not covered to men either, to read it, you know. Rebbe sent Batsheva Kanievsky, you know. Rabbi Yasha's daughter, Rabbi Levine's granddaughter, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky's wife. Like, you know, my wife is not there yet, you know, she'll be get there soon. Like, you know, like, really? You know, like, what do you want from her? Right? So now going back to page one, marriage works if you're willing to work.